You know, we have come a long way, baby. We've been doing this show since February of, I think it was 2014, and my first guest ever was a man by the name of Uriah Faber. He is the California Kid, and he is an extremely close friend of mine. So today we're going to have a throwback show bringing on the California Kid. You'll be able to tell that I was a little bit nervous at because it was my first show ever being on the radio and on podcast. And then we're also going to show another good friend of mine, Mr. Tom Kandris. He is Package One. He has since sold that business and gone on. Both of these guys have gone on to help me with a lot of really cool things in Sacramento entrepreneurship and helping other small businesses to succeed. They've got a lot of ability. You'll learn from them in today's show. But I think you'll also get a kick out of hearing Mark Haney on his first couple shows back in 2014. And maybe we can laugh a little bit at the end of today's show. So stick around, my friends.
Today, we have a good friend of mine that has been kind enough to jump in and share some of his stories. And after we're done talking to this, we are going to move to some people that are doing some great things in Rockland. So as I introduce our first guest, I want to say you know him for his MMA fame, but I know him very well in about his entrepreneurial activities. He's built several companies. And so today, we're here to talk with Uriah Faber about his entrepreneurial activities and all your businesses and all the fun stuff. What's going on, Uriah? How you doing?
What's up, folks, and I hope everybody's pumped about this new show. I think it's gonna be a huge resource for everyone. I mean, for those who don't know, Mark and I are our buddies, a group called EO Entrepreneurial Organization, and it's basically a sounding board it's almost like AA for entrepreneurs. You know, we got something special about us, and we get together and bounce ideas off and share things. And I mean, what a great idea to bring this to a broader spectrum and hopefully motivate some people, hopefully kickstart some ideas and educate and get people excited about doing business and blowing up Sacramento and beyond.
Thanks, Uriah, and thanks for being my first guest and for holding my hand through this time. And I'm looking forward to this and getting helping Sacramento get to know you a little bit better.
Right.
As we know that being an entrepreneur is fun, but it's definitely a full contact sport.
Right.
Can you give us an overview of your businesses and what you're doing?
You know, it's been an interesting progression for me. I've always been somebody that just about doing my own thing. I feel like I work super super hard and I'm creative and confident enough to go after things. So I started my first business right out of college just to make ends meet and thought it would be fun. I started something called TLC, Top Line Coaching. And I was doing wrestling camps. I was working for the college making next to nothing. I think I was making $7,000 a year as a salary for like 10-month full-time gig. And I was having to raise funds everywhere else. So I started coaching little kids at some of the junior highs around town. And I started, you know, doing an after-school program for college or for high school kids. And then I was in the summers, I was working wrestling camps. So that was the first business that I really started. But from there, my business world has kind of revolved around my passion, which has been mixed martial arts and sports, etc. So I have my gym downtown,
Ultimate Fitness,
which is Ultimate Fitness at 17th and I, and we've been open since 2006. I have my management company, which is MMA Incorporated, which has been open since 2006 as well. And we have helped guide the careers of some of the most successful fighters on the planet and current, former, and future champions. We have my clothing line, which you're rocking and looking good, by the way. You can check that out on my Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
You got Torque, which is a clothing line, and I've done another clothing line before called Form that I sold to K-Swiss some years back. I've also got my team, which is trying to build a name for Sacramento. Just like all of us entrepreneurs are trying to put Sacramento on the map in the business world, we've got our team, which is representing. There's the Sacramento Kings, and there's the Sac Republic, and there's Team Alpha Male, and Team Alpha Male is making some huge waves in the MMA world and making Sactown proud. So that's something that I started, you know, almost 11 years ago now.
So now Team Alpha Male, we'll talk, what is that business? Can you describe that business?
You know, that's been the one business that's more of a passion. So it's almost like a nonprofit without having the paperwork. You know, it's me developing the next generation of guys. As far as the business, it does serve my other businesses, which is my gym and also my clothing line and also my management company, etc. And my own brand as a fighter, you know, someone that's created something bigger than myself. But it is... It's kind of a sounding board and a springboard for guys to get their own careers going. You know, we've got a current UFC champion, TJ Dillashaw, that has just, you know, blown up and making an amazing career. We've got guys like Chad Mendes that just fought for a world championship, and Joseph Benavidez, who's been title contender, and it the list goes on and on and on. A new superstar, Paige Van Zandt. So this is a business that's been all about my passion about helping other people, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Uriah. But let's talk about, okay, so we talked about one of your companies. You've got several companies, and a lot of it is about building that brand, right? And it's around Uriah,
right,
and the California Kid. Talk to us about what you do. I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there thinking about building their brand. How do you build the brand for Uriah Faber?
You know, especially as an individual and as an athlete and someone that's in the limelight, I think the most important thing for me is understanding who I am and what I want, and then just being myself and not being afraid to be myself. So what I mean by that is, if I'm thinking something, I'll say it. If I want to do something, I'll do it. A lot of times people sit around and they think and they think and they think and they never do. And you know, as far as building a brand goes, it's choosing what you want to be out there and then finding creative ways to let people know about it. And that means understanding about strategic partnerships, about the importance of doing PR, about working harder than anyone else, which is something that is often overlooked when people think they want to do something. They don't realize how much work it is. But, you know, it takes a lot of work to let people know who you are.
That's one of the things about you, right, that's always leaped out to me, is that you do so many things and you work incredibly hard. You make it look fun. I'm sure it is fun in a lot of ways. So let's talk about your earlier influences. You grew up here in the Sacramento area in Lincoln. What were you like as a young guy?
Man, I was a pretty free-spirited guy, and I think you know, my parents, my mom Suzanne, and my pop Theo, have always been really supportive, but not necessarily like, you know, cracking the whip. I had a lot of freedom growing up, and I think that their mentality was about freedom and kind of hippies as I was a young kid, where they were, you know, I would pretty much run around naked in the streets of Isla Vista. I would, like, the first 3 years of my life in Santa Barbara, like the college town around Santa Barbara, and always encouraged to just
some things never change, huh?
Yeah. If I can, I got my shirt off in the sun, man. Shoes off. You know, they say that the closer you are to the ground, the longer you live, they say. So if I can be barefoot, I'll do that as well. But just always encouraging, but never really pushing. So I think that has been allowed me to think freely and attack my passions and not be afraid to do anything.
Now, as a young guy, there's different things that kind of shape us as we grow up. Were there any times when you were young there, you had pivotal moments that maybe were really difficult that sort of shaped you and helped you to be who you are?
You know, I've had a really, really unique background from coming from this. You know, my early beginnings was in like a Christian commune type of deal. And then my parents got in a kind of a nasty divorce when I was maybe in kindergarten, and then splitting time between my parents and not having a lot of money and things like that, but always enjoying myself. And my parents always made sure we had food on the table and we had, you know, a warm bed and all that good stuff. So that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think the thing, as far as an entrepreneur's perspective, the thing that really shaped me was my dad has always been a contractor, so he's been kind of his own boss, and I'm used to that. You know, it wasn't like he had anyone to answer to necessarily. It was him finding ways to make ends meet. So that's an entrepreneurship on its own. I wouldn't say my pop was the best entrepreneur in the world, but he was a very crafty guy. He was a craftsman as far as his building houses goes, but he was always such a nice guy. I think he'd always like to give a good deal, you know what I mean? And my mom on the other side, and this is kind of the beginning of where I started to think, why the heck did we not do this earlier? We started a coffee shop, my stepdad Tom and my mom. We were in the small town of Lincoln, and we had, you know, we'd been struggling, really. My mom had just had my little sister, and she was 38 when she had my little sister, and she used to work at Nordstrom, so she was off, and my stepdad had worked for the city. And during this time, we all, as a family, were building this tiny little coffee shop in the town of Lincoln. It took like a year. I remember the coming soon sign was up for probably a whole year. It was like coming soon, and it faded out because it had been so long. It was taking us so long to build this thing. And that whole business, when it started to run, just completely changed, you know, the financial situation for us, the way we were doing everything. And I remember thinking, why didn't we open our coffee shop like 5 years ago or whatever? You know, I mean, why didn't we do it sooner? And it was just a step in the right direction. I remember as a eighth grader seeing this thing and seeing how all of a sudden we had a little bit more cash and how, you know, we were working hard, but it was creating something fun and had a great culture. And that was when I really realized, like, just go do it.
Why do you think people decide to hold, you know, why do they hold off? And, you know, it's like you have these good ideas. Why would someone wait?
You know, life is scary, man. And I mean, talking to a guy that does something that most people would think is pretty scary, which is, you know, go in and fight other people. You know, life is scary. And it's not the fear of actually doing something. It's the fear of failure and the fear of the unknown and things like that. And that's the thing that entrepreneurs just have to completely put out of their mind and be, you know, fearless and attack things. And that's, some guys have it, some don't. Can it be taught? I think it can be taught, you know, but definitely people have it naturally as well.
Interesting. So people that know you, a lot of people feel like they know you because you're such a nice guy. Maybe it's a lot like your father, and they feel like they're your friend. So you have this charisma about you. And so I'm curious as to where did that come from? And that's got to be a part of your brand. Is that a fair statement?
It definitely is. I mean, when you see me come out and fight, for those who are listening that haven't watched me fight before, I don't know if I'm one of the few, but I'm definitely the one that stands out, who's smiling. I say hi to my mom every time before the fight. I give Sacramento a shout out. And I usually try to, you know, somebody as close as fighting cancer, you know, somebody, I try to send a good message out there. But it's definitely part of my brand. And I think, like I said before, when you're branding something, you got to be real. You don't want to be the caffeine-free drink when you're full of caffeine, you know. And that's the thing that I've done well, is just been myself. And luckily, you know, because of my parents and how I was raised and everything else, likable enough to have built a brand on just being me.
Uriah, we were talking about your brand. We talked about you growing up. Talk to us just for a minute about what it was like to be you in high school. You were a wrestler. Were you a ladies' man? What happened there? I know you have a ton of charisma. How did you use that in high school? And then how did you? And then we'll launch you into your career.
You know, high school was a lot of fun for me. I loved high school. Actually, I loved elementary school and college too. But high school was super cool. I was a Lincoln Fighting Zebra right up the hill here, and there's only at the time, Lincoln's blown up now, but there's about 8,000 people in town. We had about 600 in our school. My brother was a senior when I was a freshman, and I was an athlete. You know, I definitely was a standout athlete. I was a captain of the wrestling team, captain of the football team, and was in honors classes. So, you know, was always good with my studies, and actually was there's something called Boys State, which is a leadership. They take the top male and the top female from the school, and they put them in this leadership program and things like that. So I definitely was a leader at that point, but also getting into a lot of trouble. But we were in a small town, 8,000 people. The trouble was not.
What's getting into trouble in Lincoln?
You know,
it's not tipping over cows.
I did try to tip over cows, which is impossible, by the way. But you know, out in the country, doing stuff that high school guys do out at the lake and having big parties and you know, we were a bunch of country dudes at the time. Really, we had you know, a couple of lights in town. There was like one fast food restaurant, and it was good, man. I think, you know, you get a real tight-knit group of friends, and I'm still really tight with my guys from high school, and I had a long-term girlfriend also, who, I mean, I was with my girlfriend for the end of high school into college and beyond for a little bit before we called it quits. But you know, it was a small town feel. Everybody knows everybody, and I never got any fights or anything. It wasn't like I was getting any fights because we all knew each other, and frankly, I don't think anyone wanted to mess with me, and I didn't really start any fights in general. Yeah. Yeah. Just loved football and loved wrestling. And
what position did you play in football?
I was a cornerback. I was all league for corner, and I played, we had a wing T offense, so I played a little running back also. I was the third one in, so
okay.
every play they'd run a new guy in.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you wrestled, you were a great wrestler, and you walked on at UC Davis, right?
Right.
And then what happened from there? What happened through college so that you could launch your career?
You know, I've been, and this is something that I've learned throughout the years, and I've applied it to my fight game and to my athletic career and everything else, is just accomplishing through hard work and positive attitude and pushing through adversity, like a bunch of the different rules that we have for success. But then realizing, like, why didn't I think bigger? You know, and I was a pretty good wrestler in high school. I was top 12 in the state. I lost in double overtime to my buddy Larry Rodriguez, who to be, you know, top 8 in the state, which places. And then, you know, went to college and it was a walk-on. 3 of the 4 guys that beat me my senior year in high school ended up going to UC Davis. this. So I was a guy who was always playing catch up, I felt like, always feeling like I needed to do more and do more. Really closed that gap and was a walk-on to the team. But after that year, I beat our team captain, another friend of mine, David Yee, who is our, you know, our top guy at the time. I beat him in an open tournament and earned myself a small scholarship and kind of secured my spot as the starting wrestler for the remainder of the year. And I'll tell you what, college, you know, I came from Lincoln, right? We can, like, there's a time we're like drinking beers, sitting on the roof in between lunches in the springtime, you know, like, there's like, you know, you go camp out at the lake for a couple days at a time. I lived on 10 acres. You can fire, you know, do fireworks or shoot guns or do whatever you wanted. And then I went into the dorms and all of a sudden you have RAs and RDs and, you know, these resident directors and residence assistants and people like telling you to be quiet after a certain hour. And I almost got kicked out of college.
That what a life change, huh?
Yeah, it was crazy.
So, okay. So then you launch your, you get out of college, UFC and an MMA sport is starting to take off and all of a sudden you've launched again into this massive career and you've got, is it 7, 8, 9 companies?
Yeah.
And so now you've relaunched it again to this whole new realm that is way different than college even.
Right.
How do you manage these priorities? I've got like 7 or 8 companies too, and I've got CEO rock stars at each of these companies and they run the thing.
Right.
While I can do the radio show. How do you do it?
It's kind of the same thing. I feel like I have great strategic partnerships. And like I said, when I got in trouble in college, it was a real awakening. Like, hey, you got to adapt and play by other people's rules and you learn a lot, right? And it was just me being in a new environment and getting the whip cracked on me a little bit, but realizing, okay, you got to play by other rules and different environments, etc. And I feel like, you know, in the business world, I've got great partnerships. I feel like I go above and beyond to do my part. You know, when I serve a purpose in a business, I go above and beyond to do my part, but I find strategic people to fill in the blanks for me. You know, so it's a lot of great ideas, hard work, but you know, working together.
So when I watch you fight on TV, you guys are hitting each other. When you get hit, since you and I are friends and I'm an old man, I almost feel like I'm seeing my son get hit. It hurts me. And this question may get asked of you at other times, but how much longer are you going to fight?
You know, it's not going to be too much longer, I don't think. Right now, I'm currently coaching The Ultimate Fighter against Conor McGregor, who's the interim champ at 145 pounds. And, you know, I feel really good. You know, for those who don't know, Mark Haney is also a stellar athlete, aside from being a businessman. And he's on a quest to live forever. He's been, you know, doing every trick in the book to extend the life. But
going counterclockwise.
Yeah, trying
maybe.
To go counterclockwise. We should talk more about that, or you should talk more about that at some point. But, you know, for me, it's been something for this passion, and I feel like I'm still at the top of my game, and I'll probably go another, at the most, 2 years.
All right. So, Uriah, we're going to have a little bit of fun now. I've been having fun, but we're going to have a little bit more.
Oh, we're stepping it up.
Yeah, right. We're going to step it up a little bit. So we're going to do lightning round, okay? So
okay.
This is where I'm going to say a word, or I'm going to say a sentence, and then I want you to give me a quick reaction to that, a quick 1 or 2 word reaction.
This is my brain reflexes?
Wait, yeah. Brain right. Reflexes.
Uh-oh.
Okay, here we go. Favorite sport?
I'm going to have to go football.
Okay. Craziest fight?
My own?
Yes.
Bali, Indonesia. Look it up. Google.
All right. Last time you were afraid?
Man, I hate turbulence. Had some bad turbulence on the way to New York about a couple months ago.
First love?
First love. Well, my first girlfriend, probably Michelle.
Ah, date that you're going to get married?
TBD.
Okay. So I see how it is. Okay, so favorite TV show?
All-time favorite TV show is almost like my own babysitter because my parents are always working Cheers.
Okay. Ginger or Marianne?
I got to say Marianne.
Oh, the girl next door. Okay, so the sexiest female in UFC?
The sexiest female in UFC. I got to go with that girl, Paige Van Zandt. She's down there at the gym. If you guys want to come sign up to look at her, come on over.
All right. She's right here in Sacramento, right?
Yeah, she's a beautiful girl and also dangerous. So be kind when you talk to her.
All right. Look forward to that. And okay, so last one. What are you looking forward to over the next 6 months? Most looking forward to?
You know, my house is almost done. It's been almost done for a couple months now. So I'm actually really excited about getting this house finished. My pop Faber Construction. We just we've done this thing together, and I can't wait to get in there and kick back and relax and have all the boys over and celebrate.
So you're in Vegas now, and we are working on the Ultimate Fighter, right, reality TV show. And it looks like there's a little friction between you and the other coach. Can you give us an idea where that's going, and then a little bit more about your acting career? And because I know you have movies that you're making, you're doing all kinds of cool stuff. And if there's anything beyond that you need to share with us, that we have to know.
Okay. Well, first off, I'm pumped to be part of the dental business that we're doing in
With Aaron.
With Aaron, which is awesome, Brightway Dental, and we're opening our first location over in Elk Grove, so that's exciting. And then we've got our boy Robert Beatles, who's a friend of ours as well.
Memory tag.
We're doing that. And these are cool things that are outside of the sport, but are outside of my sport and business ventures and the real estate as well. But so the reality show, it's this guy, Conor McGregor. He's a superstar right now. He's like the fastest growing star in the sport, young guy. And he just beat my teammate, Chad Mendez, who stepped in on short notice. And we have to sit day by day and be in each other's face, coaching each other's, coaching opposite teams. And we've actually got into it a couple times. We're both kind of quick-witted and basically talking crap and keep somehow getting in locked up and wrestling around and stuff. So it's going to get interesting, man. And that's going to shoot in September.
What about this Maxim Hotties thing? Is that something I should be getting involved in? What is that?
that was a short video they did promotional for the Maxim Hometown Hotties. And they basically took that little video, which you can look it up, it's myself and Craig Robinson, and developed into a movie, and I'll be going to film that movie in September. It's called Beach Pizza. I'm pretty excited about it.
And there's a bunch of bikinis?
There will be a lot of bikinis there. I think you might need to come out there and help. You know, I think, is there a,
are there any
fluffer?
Fluffer maybe? Are there any 50-year-old in bikini? They're probably not. It's all in the TV.
Maybe. I mean, they make it overlooked, but I'm sure there's one or two.
Okay. Well, Uriah, we're wrapping up now. All I can say is thank you for being the first guest ever on Entrepreneurs Unlimited. You held my hand. I am now relaxed somewhat, and I am forever indebted. Is there anything I can do for you? What can I do to help you?
Have me back on the show, man. Okay. Let's talk some more business. And for those who don't know, Mark, he's been fairly humble, very humble, actually, on his accomplishments. So he's an amazing businessman and a great dude, a great family man. And we can all learn a lot from each other. And I've learned a ton from Mark Haney, so I appreciate you, man, as a mentor and a friend, and pumped to be on the show and looking forward to listening in every Saturday.
Thanks a lot, Uriah. People ask me, how do I choose a business partner? I usually respond back by saying, I want to have a business partner. It's the type of person I'd go out and have a cold beer with, or maybe go play slow pitch softball with. But today I want to share with you my deeper thoughts on that. I think that having the right business partner is somebody that you would choose to be a best friend, somebody you trust, somebody that shares a commitment that you share, somebody that would have your back if you were in a fight. There's a lot of people that talk the talk, but when it comes down to it, they will not back you up when you need it. And today I'm going to introduce a good friend of mine who has had my back, and he's also a tremendous entrepreneur. Welcome, Tom Kandris. How are you?
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here, buddy.
I really appreciate you, and we actually are business partners now, technically. We're starting a limo company together, but the purpose of this appearance on the show and us getting to know you better is really about your entrepreneurial story at Package One and the affiliated companies of Package One. So, Tom, if you don't mind, can you share with us a little bit about Package One, how you got started, what's it all about?
Well, I'd like to tell people that Package One, we enable commerce and save the planet one box at a time. And so really what we're about is enabling supply chain here in the region, primarily servicing Northern California. But Package One was about a change in life, but not a lifestyle business. You know, I was in the microelectronics industry for 20-some-odd years. So
you've gone from high-tech to low-tech, and now you're kind of circling back again.
Yeah, kind of high-tech to no-tech, right? And but, of course, now through the innovation, through the whole fiber technology and some of the coatings materials that we do in the packaging space, we're kind of venturing back in the technology realm.
Okay, so you're in you're in the high-tech industry. I know you guys lived in Hong Kong. You're from Sacramento, but you had a very, very successful career in the high-tech business semiconductor industry. What caused you to say, hey, look, I'm going to come back home and become an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of my career kind of trying to find a way to get to the top and be the top of my game. And I felt like I accomplished that in the technology space. I led a technology company in the Far East, had a very successful career there, but it took me away from home. I was gone 85, 90% of the time, and my family was growing up without me. And I really felt like I had arrived from a business standpoint, and I had nothing left to really accomplish in that space, except my family was living a life without me. And I felt like I had to do something. And I like to tell the story that I came home one day and I dropped my bags and my daughter ran up to me and, you know, stood in front of me. And I say, Taylor, you know, and opened my arms and she bent over and picked up a playphone and she said, hi, Daddy, because that's the only way she knew how to talk to me. And I choked back the tears only for a few hours. Eventually, I couldn't hold the tears back, but I had to make a decision. So it took me about 6 months to get the courage to resign from a company that I loved and felt had a lot of accomplishment with, and finally said, hey, I'm moving back to the United States, leaving Hong Kong, leaving that career that takes me away from my family, and I want to start a new life. And I wanted a life change, but I didn't want a lifestyle business. So I was looking for some opportunity, and I wind up in the packaging space because of a relationship with my best friend, Eric.
I want to circle back to the family in a few minutes, but thinking about this transition and your friendship with Eric and moving back to Sacramento, can you give us a little bit of a perspective? You're one of the most successful entrepreneurs I know, and your business is in manufacturing, and you make boxes, but you do much more. Can you give us a sense as to what your business is all about?
Yeah, you know, I like to say that we're a fiber company. We started off as a distribution company and eventually tapped into the manufacturing space. And I bought American River in 2005 because primarily most of our business was on the fiber and the corrugated side. But, you know, really it's about, again, helping people get their products to market in a kind of a structural and a safe capacity with high tech and design. And so enabling that part of the business was a big part of what we decided to do. And so, you know, as a technology guy, I was always looking for different ways to differentiate our company. So whether it was segmenting data to reduce the transaction cost from $40 to $14, or looking at different engineering designs to actually take fiber out of the product where I might be able to sell for less but increase my margins.
This is starting to sound high tech.
I think once you go there, you never go back, I suppose. But, you know, I was always looking for the technology out of some basic businesses. And I think, you know, you bring up a great point because a lot of people confuse, you know, innovation with invention. And innovation can be, you know, making something better, improving processes, and providing a differentiator in what could be a very staid market.
So you bring up the term differentiator. What at Package One and your affiliated companies, is technology the differentiator, or what specifically is your differentiator? And is there a road to competitive advantage, or are there areas where you have a competitive advantage?
I think looking at relevancy, I think, is a differentiator. I think that the team that I've assembled wants to be relevant in the space. And I think that nobody wants to go by the wayside of the Pony Express and being beat out by the Telegraph or by the train. And so I'm looking at how we can extend our markets and look at different ways of advancing what we do, making it better through high graphics or better strength or coatings, or looking at engineered paper designs that give our customers an advantage, but also motivate our people. I think most of our people come to work looking to make a difference, you know, not looking to punch a clock.
Some of your products, I've been over to the Sacramento factory, and your graphics people and your, I'll call them marketing type people, are off the charts. You're doing things for major companies, Levi's, major wine companies, Simpson, the guys that do hold downs for the construction industry, you know, different things for making foundations and framing. Give us a sense as the type of products that are kind of your everyday products.
Well, I would say the everyday products are the traditional brown and white boxes. I think that's what most people see behind the grocery stores and whatnot. But also, you know, we look at the structural design of displays. And so you mentioned Levi. So we've introduced some new technology that was developed by the U.S. Forestry Labs, which is really high tensile strength, high pressure fiber from recycled materials. And so there's a whole move of sustainability around the planet, but primarily here in California. So we're looking at different ways of bringing sustainable products that could be renewed and recycled, but delivering them to the market in a kind of unique way. So we have the brown and white with the print, but also I think the structural designs and the coatings, I think, also differentiates us in the marketplace.
And just to take a second here, if you have questions or comments for me or Tom Kandris, tweet us at Haney Biz Radio. So, Tom, your Simpson displays, I never thought of cardboard or corrugated as being able to withstand the weight. You know, we have a construction company and we've done a lot of foundations, and those Simpson hold downs and straps and different things like that, they've got some weight to them. And you guys are building corrugated displays that can withstand the weight of construction products.
Yeah, I think the one you're kind of recalling is the tie downs and the screws and the bolts, and that display will hold up to 800 pounds. And so it's a combination of the E-Core material also along with the corrugated products that we're bringing to market. And that's really where the engineering and design comes into play. So when I say design, it means structural as well as graphics. And I think that and when you start looking at structural and graphic designs, you got to be able to create something that actually can be manufactured on the equipment set that is traditionally found in a corrugated manufacturing plant.
So, okay, so that's very interesting. So you guys can make virtually anything out of your corrugated and your E-Core and so on. And out near your facility or at your facility outdoors, there's a digester that actually takes waste products and converts them to usable manufacturing materials
and it uses everything. You know, there's no waste associated with it. You're basically taking garbage and turn it into displays and boxes and things like that.
Well, I think that's the second part of our vision, enabling commerce and saving the planet one box at a time. And so we've partnered with Clean World Partners to put the first solid waste anaerobic digester in North America on my property. So it's technology that was brought to market from UC Davis and Berkeley Sandia Labs, commercially produced by Clean World Partners. And so we volunteered to put that digester on our plant because diversion from the landfill, you know, equals something that would help save the planet. And so when the digester is operable, we take downtown restaurant waste and mix with some of our solid fiber from our waste stream and create up to 30% of our energy when the digester is running. And the advantage is that long term, we expect to take the effluent, the solid fiber that comes out of the waste stream, and create other products, other renewable products with it, such as the E-Core product that we've been talking about.
So when you drive down, again, I've been to your Sacramento office a number of times. I haven't been to Madera or some of the other places. Well, the one in San Diego I've been to, but you drive down and it feels industrial, and you don't really notice, you wouldn't normally notice that, hey, these guys over here are doing something very innovative. And I mean, are you ever mistaken for just a, hey, you guys are just a box company?
Yeah, all the time, all the time. And what people don't realize is that manufacturers create more jobs in the region. But also I kind of joke with people. I said, if you're challenged to drive around the neighborhood and stop at every company that looks like it innovates, you'd probably drive right by my plant. And the truth is that we're innovating all day long. So we're looking at not only improving processes, but looking at new materials and technology, whether it's evaluating bio wax to replace the paraffin wax ag boxes that would actually have a redemption value and can be renewed, where right now the current ag boxes go into a landfill. So we're looking at new triglyceride-based products to create a bio-wax from soy that creates a sustainable corn, broccoli, asparagus kind of box. And so we're looking at innovation that way. We're looking at taking fiber out of recycled materials and creating things that have a higher value add.
You and I are really good friends. We're next door neighbors. We have talked about entrepreneurship. We're members of EO. You brought me into the entrepreneurial organization. And I've often heard you ask the question, when did you realize you were an entrepreneur? Because that word is sort of, it's sort of a new word. So Tom, I'm going to turn the table on you. When did you realize you were an entrepreneur?
Well, I have to say that I'm not sure that I still realize it, but I think that the first time I was anointed with a label was when I became part of the Entrepreneurs Organization.
Okay.
And their definition, I think, sort of defined me, but, you know, you're out starting a business, you're out doing things, you don't go, hey, I'm an entrepreneur. And, you know, I often look at what the makeup is of that individual. So if, you know, if you take investment dollars and you pay yourself a salary, you lose the investment dollars, are you really an entrepreneur? So I think when you have things at risk, and your passion drives you, it's less than monetary. It's more about having a vision and feeling so strong about it and being able to sell that vision to a point where other people would follow you and share your vision.
Yeah. Now, you talked about risk. So often that's associated with entrepreneurship. And I agree with you that if you're not taking a risk, you're not in the same class as people that are taking a risk in terms of entrepreneurship. I don't mean that to sound negative. I feel like I misspoke there as I said that. But if you've taken a risk and you're hanging it all on the line, there's definitely an incentive to perform. What kind of risk did you take? You left the high-tech industry and you bought into American River Packaging. Talk to us about that risk. What went through your mind as you were taking those risks? And you're taking risks today.
Well, I mean, a couple things. First is that we started Package One as a distribution company from scratch and took investment capital or savings, really, and a small SBA loan and started Package One from nothing, empty warehouse. And we thought when we started the company, we put the basketball court in one corner and the weight room in another corner. And before you know it, we filled it up with things that we sold and eventually grew like crazy. And what that did is allowed us to develop a large enough war chest and a big enough market to acquire American River in 2005. So we started, you know, frankly, my partner and I didn't take a dime out of the company. We started to repay ourselves the money we loaned the company. But we, for 3 years, made a complete investment into technology, to inventory, to growing the market. We acquired a number of what I like to call pop and pops, people who have created jobs for themselves.
Not mom and pops.
No, pop and pops mostly.
In boxes. There are moms in boxes.
There are moms in boxes. There's a lot of great moms in boxes. But so we started rolling up the region's supply chain. So that was part of the vision. So eventually we expanded into Utah. So, but, you know, we grew like crazy. The opportunity to acquire American River through the recapitalization of assets and through leverage rather than take investment capital was a turning point for us. So we did acquire through leverage, and things looked really good. It looked really easy. We, you know, took on the people. It was a good culture match. Then, frankly, the fit hit the shan in 2007, 2008 timeframe. Being a highly leveraged company with a bunch of acquisitions, with multiple platforms, the timing was a bit challenging.
So most entrepreneurs think of leverage as you're going out and getting a small business loan, maybe some other kind of loans from friends and family. In your leveraged situation, did you guys personally guarantee loans and things like that? I mean, were you really like, uh-oh, this could cut into my world?
Well, in 2005, you know, acquired American River, and did require personal guarantees and highly leveraged. It was a risk. I felt it was a pretty good calculated risk. And unfortunately, you know, the market took a downturn. Commodity pricing, you know, raw material pricing was going crazy. Katrina hit. So it got ugly really, really quick. And I think kind of what you're alluding to is that in 2007, frankly, I almost lost everything. And I remember laying in bed with my wife, you know, thinking, I just can't do this anymore. Makes me sound like crybaby because I'm telling you I cried twice now. So, but I literally remember in tears and saying, I just can't do this anymore. And then I realized, you know, with the support of my wife, Teresa, you know, said, I can't quit. I can't fire me. The bank could own everything in the end. So I drug my backside out of bed, and I went to work on some plans that were completely contrary to me. I mean, it's grow, 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 go, go, go. And some of the decisions I had to make were to sell off the distribution company that I started in 2000, and in order to pay off some debt. Oh, and wow. So it was a very difficult period of time. But the whole challenge there was, you know, do I let the species go extinct or do I salvage the species? And so we chose to, you know, to make some changes. But I do want to make this comment, is we sold off two significant pieces of business, the distribution company and the manufacturing location in Sparks, and we made sure everybody had jobs through the acquiring companies.
That's very the right thing to do. It's just the way that you are, Tom. Was this a what'd you learn from this, I guess, tremendous challenge? You must have learned some stuff about yourself.
You know, I think I'm still learning, and you know, I'm not sure. You know, every challenge, I wouldn't say that there's a recipe going forward. I think every challenge is different. At that moment, there were some historical things where I had left some companies too soon, and in the semiconductor space, I was able to get some stock options and things like that, and I sometimes felt like I left these organizations too soon, and the payoff sometimes could have been bigger if I waited and dug in and made things happen. And so I think my past experiences gave me the resolve to hang in there. So like you know, I'm not going to go backwards, and B, I developed a mindset that there's always a business decision to be made. You may not like it, but there's always a decision to be made.
Where did your style, your motivation, your determination, your perseverance, these basic fundamental traits, they must have been shaped from your childhood or some things that happened to you early on. Can you give us a sense? You grew up here in Sacramento. Can you give us a sense as to what kind of things shaped you and shaped who you are when you were young?
Well, I think sometimes you look at missed opportunity and you know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda. And the other part of it is just the desire and the belief that you know, you could do better. And frankly, I think the things that shape me and a lot of other entrepreneurs is really fear. I mean, motivation. Am I really enough? And so you look at, like, when we start our businesses, or the desire to keep going sometimes is born out of what people consider your own personal deficiencies.
So many entrepreneurs were athletes, or they were part of teams. And I know your culture at Package One is very good. The team is united. Talk to us about, and you were an athlete. How did that shape you?
Well, I tell you, I'm 57, and so I grew up Foothill High School. Go Mustangs! you know, Coach Lindy, rest his soul. God rest his soul. Coach Frank Nagy was there for a long time. So, I mean, really, it was a day when, you know, the motivation was less coddling; it was more intense. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs in my age group have that same level of intensity. And I do think that team sports and managing through adversity really is a trait that entrepreneurs must have. You know, they must have a we all win together attitude. They must have perseverance. They must have, you know, the passion. And I think without that, I think that they give up too soon. And the entrepreneur really has got to be the guy that turns out the lights at the end of the day if all said and done doesn't work out the way it should.
We've got a background as to what's been happening with Package One and how you got into Package One. But the culture at Package One is one of team. We spoke about that. Talk to us a little bit about your philosophies for business. I know that you never claim to be the boss. You don't say, hey, I'm in charge. That's just, you're humble in that way. Talk to us about your business philosophies.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is that there's we started the company in 2000, took our first orders February 18th of 2000, and no one in my company's ever heard me say I'm the owner of this company. And I think that I'm the CEO as long as the company will have me. Frankly, I mean, it's if I'm not the right guy to lead, and eventually the company will outgrow me, perhaps, then we'll find the next team. But I really think that, you know, we try to hire a management team of adults, you know, people that know what they do, are supposed to be doing and do it, give them the broader challenges. You know, microelectronics world, a lot of smart people, they don't want to be told what to do. Manufacturing business, a little bit more directive, but I'm trying to bring in the tech philosophy of people knowing what to do, taking the responsibility and doing it. Because frankly, I think that done the right way, it can be a lot more fulfilling for people.
He's talking about the philosophy. You often think about the culture of a company is how the team thinks. The cumulative, the combined way that all the team thinks ends up being the company culture. You talked about empowerment. In what way do you empower your people? You've got to have accountability.
Well, you know, we'd like to think that we've got accountability. It doesn't always work that way. I think we do miss targets, but I think it's really about how you respond. And I think that the resiliency and the courage that my team has, you know, we're going to make mistakes. We miss targets. It's been a tough year with the economy and the price pressures and things like that. So I think the resiliency is about how we support each other and give people the tools to do their job.
And you talk about the economy, and you and I have often had discussions about how can you play it and you can't harness the ocean. What do you do when the economy deals you some bad cards?
Yeah, well, I do like to say that. I say, you know, you can't harness the ocean. You can only navigate it. So I think it's about giving what the market will give you. And it's also about putting some predictive tools in place. And predictive tools is not necessarily a Ouija board or a crystal ball. But in California, they kind of make their predictive tools a little bit easier, and they do it through legislation mostly. And so the whole greening sustainability component is, you know, designing. There's some legislation out there, and I believe, I might get it wrong, but around 2020, there's supposed to be a reduction of packaging materials out of the landfill by 75%. And so, you know, so I'm constantly looking at ways of taking renewables or designing things with things that can be renewed, taking plastics and foam and things like that out of the bracing structures of packaging and substituting with fiber-based products. So, you know, kind of the crystal ball is somewhat dictated by the market, but also taking advantage of what the market gives you.
Tell me about a big win story that you've had. Tell me when you've really won.
You know, boy, that's, I would say that, you know, I'm not necessarily a cup half empty guy. And I think there's nothing 100%. And so I look at the wins along the way as being you know, the biggest win I have hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But I would say that I'm going to back up and say that the biggest win was, you know, the fork in the road, leaving the microelectronics industry and choosing my family was probably the biggest win. And then along the way, having shared that journey for a time with my partner, Eric, having the opportunity to acquire American River and leverage that. The downside is selling it off in 2007, but now growing it back in a significant way, now being partners and an investor in Northern Sheets and McClellan Park and Central California Sheets in Kingsburg, and really just kind of growing the other factories that we have in Sacramento and Madera.
Social responsibility is often thought of as important and necessary, and I think you exemplify that with the way you're positioning your company with the green technology and the high tech and all the opportunity that's created there with the growth of your company. But you also are on several boards. You're on the board of directors of the Entrepreneurial Organization. I know we're on that together. Social Venture Partners, we're on that together. But I think you're on – how many boards are you on? You're on a lot.
I'm on a number of boards. I am. You know, but I do calendar it. If it's on my Outlook, I do – it does get done. But I really look at the community as a whole, and I chose to come home to Sacramento and you know, my commitment to the region was to, again, not create a lifestyle business, but to create a business that creates as many jobs as I can. I want to make the Sacramento region the best region it possibly can be. And I think other than telling somebody you love them, giving them a job is the next best thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Have you ever been accused of overboarding, being on too many boards?
Yeah, you accuse me of that all the time. A number of people have done that. And, you know, but I really think that what I try to do is I try to choose things that leverage my strengths. I don't want to say that I don't prepare, but don't require a lot of extra learning, you know, and I also try to bring, you know, lump things together of similar things in a similar day or in a similar week. So I try to manage my time where if I'm working with the chamber board, I'm on the executive committee for the Sacramento Chamber, and I'm the board chair at St. Francis High School. So I'm just really things that I'm really passionate about in terms of building community, building jobs, and the next thing is it's all education based.
So thinking about the future, you and I are starting a business together. We're bringing in Marcus, my son, a Marine, that is going to help us build a limousine company called Limitless Limo. So that's another opportunity that you're providing. So are you just – you can't shut it off.
No, but I'm inspired by your son, Marcus. He's a rock star. So I have a lot of confidence in him. But, you know, I think, you know, we talked about, you know, the things that we do for our livelihood, but it's also nice to engage in you know, creating businesses and opportunities that create a lot of fun in the spirit of fun. And I hope like crazy we don't lose any money on this deal.
Never.
But it's just – it's fun. It's
entertaining. I don't know what our burn rate is, but it's it's coming back.
But, you know, it's a cool ride, and I enjoy you know, cruising Sacramento and some sporting events in it.
Okay, good. Now, you talked about fun. You and I have done a ton of fun things. You've introduced me to, you have Niner tickets, you've got Giants tickets, Kings tickets. We travel together. you're living your bucket list every day. What, I mean, if you had to say, hey, here's something I really want to do, what would that be?
You know, I think that when I look at what my bucket list might look like, I think it's less of the adventure piece. You know, it's less about, you know, where I can go and what I can do, because I think you kind of hit it on the head. I think we do a lot of really cool things. But I think just kind of enriching, you know, and, you know, we got this thing called the wheel. So the bigger, rounder wheel. It's about family, relationships, friendships, adventure, health, spirituality. You know, it's taking all these different things and finding a way to populate all those buckets and making that wheel, as we call it, as big and as round as possible. And I think that I think that's really where I would like to take my life.
You came and spoke to our team, our group of teams at our office, and you were able to inspire them, inspire me. What would you say advice-wise to young entrepreneurs thinking about taking a risk? We only have a minute left.
You know, I'd say take the risk, but if you're passionate about it. I mean, I think ideally, if you could find something that you really enjoy and you could be passionate about it and you'd like to do that above all else, and monetary success is not as critical, then I would say do it. You know, most entrepreneurs don't go out and say, hey, look, I'm going to take wheelbarrows of money home. And frankly, I don't think people would want to work for somebody like that. The entrepreneurs that I associate with really have a vision. They have a passion for what they're doing, and they want to change the world. They want to change something significant. And so if that's the case, then I think you have a good chance of succeeding, because the amount of reward will come, and because people like to be around people who are passionate.
Fun to think back to where we began back in 2014. Have come a long way. My team has grown. My team has strengthened. And in many ways, our podcast has become more refined. Most of what we're doing today is a focus on funding and really investing into entrepreneurs. And we built out a co-working space down here at Haney Biz. But you know what? It's been a fun 7-8 years. But the next 7 or 8 are going to be even more fun. So stick around. More podcasts, more Mark Haney, more investment, more education, more entertainment coming to you on the Mark Haney Show. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.